Message. Ours is the heritage of Western civilization, a civilization built by adventuring men through 30 generations of trial and glory, from the Middle Ages to the 20th century. The American Broadcasting Company proudly presents Heritage, dramatic adventures from the chronicles of 10 centuries of Western civilization. Materials for these documentary programs are prepared in cooperation with Life magazine, based upon Life's picture history of Western man, and produced in collaboration with leading scholars and educators. Today, Heritage dramatizes the fabulous adventures of a man who introduced the world to itself, Marco Polo, with Charles Irvin as narrator. In 1300, through the narrow cobbled streets of Venice, a stranger walks. Clothed in dust-covered rags, he nevertheless has the bearing of a conqueror. Finally, he pauses before an ancient and venerable house.
Open! Open, I say!
Who is it? What do you mean, raising such a racket before an honest man's house?
An honest man's house? Well spoken. Oh, this is my house. Let me in.
You must be mad. Go away, you beggar. This is the house of the honored Antonio of Venice.
What's the trouble? Who is this fellow?
Antonio, don't you know me?
I do not, you ragged beggar. Nor have I ever known the likes of you.
Then know me now, you greedy rascal. For I am your cousin, Marco Polo.
Marco Polo. His is a name that thunders through the ages. Born in Venice of a merchant family about the year 1254, he became the first traveler to cross the entire continent of Asia, the first to record the perilous deserts of Persia, the first to visit the jade-bearing streams of Khotan. Marco Polo was the first traveler to describe accurately the life of people in ancient China, Tibet, Burma, Siam, Ceylon, India. In a report so amazingly accurate that it is possible to trace on a map the route he traveled.
Look, cousin, upon this wealth. Rubies, sapphires, and here, gold. And my garments under these ragged clothes, look.
Silks and tapestry cloth woven of gold.
These riches are as nothing to what I have seen in the East and China.
Thus did Marco Polo come home, back to the narrow world of 13th century Western Europe. He returned as a fabulous voyager from a journey that he had begun as an enterprising businessman. In the generations following his death, the fame of his reports of what he had seen would grow, and history would afford him the place as the chief person who inspired Western man to explore and exploit the East. In that sense, Marco Polo introduced the world to itself. But in his own time, the things he reported were so fantastic that his name for a while became synonymous not with travel and discovery, but with a great lie.
I tell you, I was offered a reward for catching the dog of the Doge.
For that flea-bitten hound? Is that a Marco Polo?
But it's true. He offered me 20 florins.
20 florins? Listen who's talking. He's a regular Marco of the millions.
But now, it is many years since Marco Polo returned to Venice, and he sits, an old man, waiting for guests from a neighboring town.
What hour is that, Manita?
Half after, Master.
And yet no guests.
Is it not worth a man's life to travel city streets after dark? Thieves and bravos lie in wait for the wayfarer, and heaven help him who is set upon.
In the realm of the Great Khan in China, the streets are policed by soldiers to protect the citizens. And Venice, they say, is a civilized city.
It is the showplace of the world, Messer Marco Polo.
Not of the world, good woman, of the West. At times like these, one realizes how far behind we are.
Far behind what, Messer Polo?
My memories, good woman, my memories. Admit my guest.
Good evening, worthy woman. May luck and fortune attend you.
Who is there?
Ah, may I present myself, Mr. Marco Polo? Cesare de Serettini, dramaturge, necromancer, master magician, skilled in the arts, both black and white, at your service, sir.
I have noted that a man who places himself at my service usually wishes to have me at his.
Aptly said, sir. Astonishingly well put. I should be most grateful, Messer Polo, to have your ear in private.
You will leave us, Moneta.
But
when
not...
the guests arrive, come and interrupt me and the gentleman.
You lack the gift of first sight if you mistake this for a gentleman.
Now then, sir, to the point.
The point, sir, is the marvels of the East. At first, I said to myself, such things as Messer Polo describes are not practically possible. Indeed, they are not natural. And then I realized the truth. Of course, they are not natural. They are supernatural.
What mean you?
I mean that the prodigious and fantastic wonders of the Empire of Cathay could not have been accomplished without a touch of sorcery.
Sorcery?
Magic.
It is a rare pleasure, Messer Serratini, to meet a man who believes my reports, and as a sort of reward of virtue, I'm tempted to tell you of the magic of Kublai Khan, Lord of the East.
Then I am right?
Indeed, the great Khan was a man of magic, and much he did was not without a touch of wizardry. What sort of secret would most interest you?
The secret of, say, turning base metals into gold, or of transmuting stones into precious jewels.
Would it serve your purpose to hear of the burning gems of Kublai Khan?
Burning gems, Messer?
Recollections flock behind the eyes of Marco Polo as he recounts how he, his father, and his uncle made the 3.5-year journey to the boundaries of the Khan's empire. They were met by the emissaries of the Emperor of Cathay while still 40 days from the imperial court at Khan Balu.
We saw them riding toward us from the horizon, a company of mounted men. Men dressed in cloth of gold and silks, adorned with skins of the sable and the ermine, and all in richest fashion.
Hey, Christian gentlemen! We bid you welcome, and come to see to your comfort at the behest of our master, Kublai Khan.
We are most pleased, gentlemen, at this courtly welcome.
May we have leave to enter your tents, gentlemen?
If you will forgive our poor hospitality.
The obligation of hospitality is upon us. Our emperor has instructed us to say that he awaits your coming with eagerness and has laden our camels with rich gifts for your delight.
We would be most delighted by a gift more useful and rich.
So you have but to speak, my friends.
Truth is, my son means that the night winds are chill, and we have suffered greatly from the cold.
Cold?
Yes.
Zhongzhou?
Yes, my lord.
You have braziers at hand?
Yes, my lord.
Fill them for the comfort of our guests.
At once, my lord.
What does he do?
He makes ready to warm you.
To warm us?
Yes.
But he has no wood. What is he placing in the braziers? Looks like a pile of black, shiny gems.
Gems they are, gentlemen, but meant for a purpose more important than the adornment of beautiful women, as you will see. Come, Chanto, light the flames.
Yes, my lord.
Marco, look.
Gems.
These gems give fire.
Yes, the black and shining gems gave fire. And Marco Polo looked for the first time on a new wonder. Here was a fuel that could be easily stored. A fuel, as they later learned, that could be mined in great quantities. To Marco Polo, it was a miracle. To the populations of Europe and America today, it is a commonplace necessity to which they have given the name of coal.
Perhaps Messer Marco Polo does not understand. This is not magic as I meant it. I am interested in such things as curing the sick by laying on of hands, or making a damsel flame with love by reciting a secret charm.
Oh, then it is making people happy that interests you?
Well, in a sense, that might be said.
The great Khan was skillful in this. Let me tell you a tale of the magic of Kublai Khan that made me recognize him as the master of all sorcerers. It began one black night in a small village of a southern province. It began in wind and thunder, disaster and flood. Next morning, I walked with the great Khan himself and expressed my pity for the villagers.
Pity? But why, good Marco? The danger is over now.
Almighty Lord, Sovereign of Sovereigns, now I feel pity, for now the worst begins. Privation, hunger, and suffering.
Suffering? Hunger? Why should they suffer or hunger? They are good subjects all. Farmers, masons, woodcutters. I do not think heaven meant them to suffer, and therefore I will not permit it.
Not permit it? Mighty Lord, ruler of nations and kings, how can you prevent it?
A wise ruler knows that rain must fall and prepares for flood while the sun shines.
And Kublai Khan has prepared. Hear now a commissioner of the Khan taking over after a disaster.
Hear ye, and take comfort. The royal granaries of the province of Manji are to be open to the citizenry of that province to assist them through this present calamity and to aid them in rebuilding and recovering their community from the ravages of the flood.
Centuries before our time, Kublai Khan set up a centralized network of storage granaries, supplied with necessities for a stricken population, food, clothing, grain, what today we call disaster relief.
With all due respect, Messer Marco Polo, this is scarcely mystical sorcery as practiced by the magician Merlin and the priests of Bawana. Can you not recite me something nearer to true magic in the Khan's lists of accomplishments?
Perhaps. For the Khan was most proficient. Indeed, now that I recall, he ended the very terror of night itself.
Now, this is of great interest, for I am often called on to break a spell of fear that lies upon men's minds at night, and often I fail to do it. How was it done?
By removing the dread of sudden destruction by fire.
Surely no man can so control the elements without resorting to enchantment.
Indeed, it would seem so.
Then what enchantment did he use?
Listen, and I will tell you. A fire breaks out in Kanbalu. The cobbler Sojan lies asleep in the top story above his shop. The crackle of flames below.
Sergeant, my husband, wake up! Our shop is on fire! 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 Fire!
Sojan sits up in bed, an ancient, feeble man. The bedchamber is thick with smoke. Terror clutches at his heart. But even as Sojin realizes his peril, a guard in one of the innumerable fire watchtowers spotted on every street throughout the city is already aware of the emergency. Word is quickly transmitted to the tower staff.
Cobbler shop at the junction of Great Canal and the Street of the Lotus Dragon has taken fire.
Give the emergency alarm to the other watchtowers in the area.
Sound the alarm!
Water machines, rush ladders, and full paraphernalia will be required.
The alarm is given with hollow wooden drums and huge brazen gongs.
Water brigade and ladder groups assembled with equipment, sir.
Very well. Dispatch at once.
Make way! Make way in the name of Kublai Khan!
In a time when a Venetian merchant would have resigned himself to losing all his worldly possessions, and municipal fire prevention was all but unknown, the subjects in the capital cities of the Empire of Cathay could sleep in comparative security, their lives and property safeguarded by an organized municipal force. Little wonder that Marco Polo returned to Venice with tales of the glory of mighty Kublai Khan.
This is wondrous law, but you say nothing of witchcraft, nor of the casting of spells, nor of anything that can put money in the purse.
Oh, it is of money you wish to hear.
Well, I confess to a deep fondness for the stuff. Tell me, did the Khan possess the trick of changing other substance into gold?
He possessed an even stranger trick of turning gold into another substance. I remember it quite clearly. We had been in Cathay a short time, and my uncle, my father, and I had sold the Khan's purchasing agent some merchandise. Early one morning it was that his chief servant arrived to reimburse us.
My master's debt to you is in what amount, good Christian gentleman?
The reckoning is 1,000 byzants of gold.
Excellent. That is the Khan's understanding also. I have been instructed to pay you at once. I have it here.
Where?
In my purse.
What sort of jest is this? To say you carry 1,000 byzants of gold in that small purse. It would take a huge bag to carry so much.
I intend, sir, to pay you in paper.
In paper? We sold the goods for gold.
Here is what my master has sent you. A paper worth 100,000 byzants. And I bid you good day, Christian gentleman.
Paper! Look what he's handed us, this vexatious rogue. Were you not a servant of his majesty, I'd have you thrown into the streets. We were promised gold for our merchandise. 1,000 byzants of it.
Those bits of paper, my friend, are 1,000 byzants of it.
Thus, Marco Polo, accustomed to dealing only in cumbersome golden coins, had his first encounter with paper money. Anywhere in the vast empire of the Khan, this paper could purchase its face value in gems, food, arms, spices, or whatever necessity or luxury its bearer might desire. The paper was as valuable as gold, and more valuable than gold, for it turned the cumbersome metal itself into time, convenience, and a freedom of trade unknown to the Western world.
This Khan of yours knew no magic of the true sort, then?
What is a true sort of magic?
Why, it's that which creates something of value out of nothing.
Something of value? Well, this depends upon definition. What would you say is the most valuable thing in the world, sir?
Money.
No, this cannot be true. For I am a man of much money, but all I have will not buy me one second of time beyond my span of life. Therefore, I must insist that time has an even greater value.
But time, no man can create time.
Kublai Khan could, and he did.
What?
Listen, and I will tell you truly how Kublai Khan created time itself. At at nightfall on an evil day in a distant province, hundreds of miles from Kublai Khan's palace at Kanbalu, two rebellious chieftains, Nayan and Kaidu, met in the great hall of a remote castle.
Make haste, Knave. Can you not see the Honorable Kaido's goblet is empty?
Oh, your wine is excellent, my good Nayan. And your plan more excellent. I have long longed to see an end of your imperial kinsman, this lofty Kublai Khan.
The time is ripe for it, my good friend. Join forces with me now, adding your army of 100,000 horse to the 300,000 which I can bring into the field. And we can seize the power of these broad domains before Kublai is even aware of our intentions.
I can mobilize my men within the month and bring them to you mounted and under arms.
I have your hand upon it.
My hand.
To the end of Kublai Khan.
To the end of Kublai Khan.
But Kublai Khan was not without friends even in the great hall of Nayan. And they made haste that the Khan should receive knowledge of the plot against him. Now the information about the rebellion having been given to a messenger, he rides like the wind, carrying his dispatches along the great road of the Khan. The messengers of the great Khan are able to move with the speed of screaming wind, for spreading out from the royal city and extending to all the provinces are maintained great highroads or post roads for the use of the king's messengers. Every 25 miles is a station house, and at each station 400 horses are kept in constant readiness in order that all messengers going and coming upon the business of the great Khan shall move with speed. In the Khan's dominions, no fewer than 200,000 horses are thus employed in the department of the post, and 10,000 buildings with suitable furniture are kept up. And as each messenger approaches a station, a new horse is ready for him.
The messenger is coming! The signal from the lookout! The Khan's messenger is coming!
A second signal from the lookout is a messenger of urgent business. He bears the great seal of the Garhalkin on his tunic.
A fresh horse! A fresh horse!
The horse is ready!
Flash the fire beacons! Clear all roads to the next station! The messenger wears the great seal!
Here he comes! Hold the horse!
I better message your priority. Fresh horse! A fresh horse!
Now it can be understood how the great Khan could create time itself, for only he had the post roads. And his messages were sent at the speed of 250 miles a day. Considering that 10 or 12 miles a day represented fast travel for a lone horseman on other terrain, the post roads and relays of horses gave the great Khan an advantage of speed over his enemies that was as lightning to smoke. The Khan's was the fastest communication system in the world in the 13th century. Mobilizing a vast army, the emperor reached the rebellious territory within 25 days. When the troops were drawn up, the great Khan took his station in a large wooden castle borne on the backs of four elephants. An infinite number of wind instruments wailed to the sky. Now, the signal for battle is given. This the great Khan does by the use of mighty drums. First to the right, and then the left wings to attack. It is a sound to make the rock shudder when the great drums of Kublai Khan begin to sound.
Oh!
fierce conflict was joined that day, from which Kublai Khan emerged Lord of Lords, unchallenged Emperor of Cathay.
These were only part of the wonders he performed, Messer Serratini.
There were no other wonders, wonders beyond the understanding of men.
All that I have told you is beyond the understanding of men, for I am often disbelieved and mocked.
Good master, your guests arrive.
In a moment, Juanita. Oh, wait.
Yes, master?
Tell Messer Serratini who my guests are.
Why, there be Messer Barboso.
The money lender?
Aye, gold is all that counts to him. He scoffs at the idea of paper money. It's beyond his understanding.
And then there be Messer Orcini.
Orcini the cloth merchant. You have rich friends, Marco Polo.
But poor in ideas, for last year his warehouse was destroyed by fire, yet he will take no initiative in organizing municipal fire towers, saying each man must protect his own.
And my Lord Martinel and his lady are come.
All Venice knows her jewel.
And all Venice knows that the Ruby of Fire was stolen from her on the streets when her retinue was ambushed by brigands. Yet she and her husband disbelieve me when I tell of the police protection of the great cities of China.
And then there'll be...
Never mind, Juanita. Whatever their names, my friend Serratini understands my point. They live smugly. What I tell them is beyond their understanding. Go to them, Juanita. I will be there shortly.
Yes, master.
Marco Polo, you have told me many things.
I have not told the half of what I saw.
But I implore you, what of true magic? True magic wonders of Kublai Khan.
The magic to change things, Serratini, comes from forces more mystical and more powerful than any powders or incantations of your poor art. For the greatest magic is that in the minds and hearts of men who dream and act, who push or pull mankind forward with imagination and courage, who are ingenious, inventive, insatiable in their hope for a better world and a better life. Learn that magic, Serratini, and you will no more probe the black arts.
Marco Polo, through his words, his writings and journals, which even today are remarkable volumes of reporting, fired the imagination, the greed, the adventure and dreams of generations who followed him. He introduced the world to itself, for the lure of the East, with its riches and spices, drew merchants and voyagers over the face of the earth. Marco Polo stands in history as a great symbol of all those men who pushed forward the frontiers of their time. Theirs is the gift of heritage.
Next week, a great chapter from the heritage of medicine, the story of antisepsis. Be sure to listen.
Materials for these documentary programs are prepared in cooperation with Life magazine, based on Life's picture history of Western man, and produced in collaboration with leading scholars and educators.
Heritage is produced and directed by Sherman H. Dreyer. Today's program, in association with ABC, featured Louis Van Ruten as Marco Polo and Gregory Morton as Serratini. Others in the cast were Dorothy Francis, Gilbert Mack, Arnold Robertson, and Bill Griffiths. Narrator for Heritage is Charles Irving. Original music by Al Datz and Ralph Norman. The orchestra conducted by Mr. Norman. Today's script by Peter Barry. This is Gordon Fraser speaking.
This program was transcribed. This is ABC Radio Network. It's 10 o'clock at KECA, AM and FM, Los Angeles.